A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
Imagery from a CCTV camera cuts in and out. Then a young woman sitting in a small room appears.
I'm just making sure that our recordings are on. Just give me 1 second.
Good to go?
The woman wears a long-sleeve gray sweatshirt and sits at a small table. She has glasses, and her dark hair is in a long braided ponytail. A man in his 30s wearing a suit sits down next to her.
Okay, start at any point in time, wherever you feel comfortable, and then we're gonna move forward, okay?
The woman bows her head, rapidly rubs her hands together, then grabs a bottle of water from the table.
Take a deep breath, Jennifer, and tell me about what happened tonight.
Jennifer takes a drink. Her cheeks expand as she holds the water in her mouth. Words appear. A Netflix documentary. Next, imagery outside a home at night.
911, Joe.
Help me, please. I need help. I don't know where my parents are.
What's going on?
Some people broke into our house and they just stole all this money, and I could hear my parents yelling downstairs. Please send help.
Jennifer in the interview room.
Then I heard two pops. My mom screamed. I yelled out for her. And a couple more pops.
She lowers her head and brings her hands to her face.
Take your time. Take your time.
Where are you?
Avenue
Road. Can you spell Virginia for me, please?
Dad? They're calling my
mom. Ma'am. Hello.
Words appear. A Raw production.
This case was something that we'd never seen before.
Crime scene photos.
It was a situation that I could never have imagined.
All I could hear was my dad screaming on the street. I was yelling at him, but he wouldn't come in. I don't know if he didn't hear me, but he just wouldn't come in.
This quickly developed into something that nobody ever saw coming.
You know what? Just stay there, okay?
Imagery inside a home.
Jennifer?
A photo of Jennifer sits on an end table.
Jennifer?
A police SUV races down a city street at night. An exit door is at the end of a long hallway.
Just do the best you can, given what you're dealing with. Remember, we're here to help you.
Subtitle, female officer.
You're okay.
Jennifer sits up.
You know what? You can't worry about this. I mean, we learned. But you did what you had to do, right? That's the bottom line.
Jennifer's image appears on a video monitor. She sets her glasses in her lap and covers her eyes with her hands. The title, What Jennifer Did, appears in a white font on a black background. An aerial view of a parked police SUV with the number 531 on the roof. Red and blue lights flash in the darkness. A large bank of snow lines the side of the street. Archival footage of police and emergency vehicles parked on a street. Words appear, Markham, Ontario. A middle-aged man in a suit sits at a desk. Detective Bill Curtis, lead investigator.
It's late. I'm in bed. I've just fallen asleep. Phone rings. And I'm thinking, you gotta be kidding me. I mean, Markham's a very family-oriented area. Very low crime rate. Less than you would see around the rest of Canada. But now they're telling me we've had a double shooting. It's a very violent scene. And you're going to be the primary in the case.
Archival footage of Inspector Fred Moffat, York Regional Police.
The call came in about 10:30 p.m. tonight. It came from a resident of the house. It is a confirmed homicide. We have one person deceased. We have a second victim that's been shot as well and been hospitalized. Other than that, I don't have a lot.
Detective Alan Cook, homicide investigator.
Our first task is to identify what has actually happened in the house. This is a violent crime that has taken place. We have one deceased female, Big Pan, and we have another male, Hand Pan, who has suffered injuries to his head.
A photo of the middle-aged couple standing on a balcony. They both have dark hair and are dressed formally. Next, archival footage.
The Pan family had immigrated from Vietnam years ago and were simply described as hardworking people. with nothing obvious about them that explains why they'd be targets for such a horrendous attack.
An air ambulance lands. A body on a stretcher is offloaded at the hospital. Bill Curtis.
We start receiving reports back from the hospital. Han has been transported there by air ambulance. He's actually sustained a gunshot wound to the eye that traveled into his skull and down into his jaw and his neck. And he's been put into an induced coma.
Han is wheeled towards the hospital. Alan Cook.
We are worried Han Pan is not going to survive his injuries and that we're only going to have one witness that we can interview.
Blood drops on a tile floor.
And that is his daughter, Jennifer Pan.
Imagery inside the home. On an end table is a photo of Jennifer wearing a light-colored formal dress. She holds a bouquet of flowers and a plaque. Archival footage shows Jennifer stepping out of an ambulance at the hospital. She is accompanied by police and hospital staff. Nighttime at the York Regional Police Building. Words appear. Day one, interview one. Jennifer, seated at the table, appears on a video monitor inside a dimly lit surveillance room. A woman in a police uniform leaves the room.
Thank you, Sergeant. Just close that door for me.
A timestamp reads 2:44 a.m.
Okay, Jennifer, my name is Randy Slade. I introduced myself to you at the hospital. I'm a member of the York Regional Police Homicide Unit.
Bill Curtis.
As a lead investigator, this does rest on my shoulders. It can't be a shoddy job. It can't be a surface check. It has to be a full analysis of the Pan's life, really. I mean, what may have precipitated this, right? Did they have enemies? Who knows?
Jennifer's interview.
So I want you to sort of take yourself back to earlier on today. Tell me what happens from there.
So my mom had prepared dinner because she was heading to go dancing that night, line dancing. She does it every Monday. And so her and I sat down for dinner first. And then I upstairs in my room, called it a night with the TV on, talking on the phone with a friend of mine. And then shortly after, my mom came home, and I believe that was around 9:30 or so. Suddenly I just heard my mom calling for my dad to come down. And that's when I peered out of my bedroom door. And a guy was there, and he came at me and tied my arms back and said, "I have a gun behind your back. Do what I say. If you do what I say, then no one will get hurt. Where is the money? Show me where your money is."
Detective Slade eyes Jennifer and rubs his bottom lip.
Then the three men, they dragged me down the stairs and asked my mom where her purse was.
Jennifer takes a deep breath and fights tears.
My mom kept trying to get up, and they kept telling her, "Sit down." And so I didn't want her to get hurt, so I told her, "Mom, sit down." They were trying to find her wallet, but her English sank, so she kept saying, "Purse." They kept pushing her down onto the chair.
Okay. Take your time. Take your time. All this is very important, so take your time.
At that point, they had taken me and they tied me to the top of the banister. I could still move, but I was afraid to because the one guy just had that gun.
Her body tightens. She lowers her gaze.
Next thing I know, I think I hear my parents going down the stairs, and my mom was asking them for me to come with them. They wouldn't let me come with them. And after they said, the last things I heard them say was, "You lied. You lied to us. You lied to us." And then I heard two pops. My mom screamed. I yelled out for her. And a couple more pops.
Her body trembles. She covers her face with her hands. Detective Slade reaches for a tissue box on the table.
Take your time. Take your time.
Bill Curtis watches on a monitor.
Trying to get someone to talk about a traumatic event is very difficult. I mean, she may want to just repress the memory. So it's critical, first and foremost, to make sure that she's fine. But as well, I want her to continue speaking to our investigators.
And just
Take a minute.
A middle-aged woman with dark hair drives a car at night. Later, she sits at a desk. Detective Deborah Gladding, victim liaison officer.
I am the point of contact for the victims. If they're having a difficult time, at any point in time, you're always on call for them. If they're struggling with anything, you're that person that they reach out to.
She walks down a long hallway inside a well-lit building.
But at the same time, it is so traumatic. I could not imagine experiencing what Jennifer is going through. So in my mind, I'm thinking, just keep it slow and steady. You know, just monitor her statement. Keep her talking about what had happened.
3:17 a.m. Gladding watches the interview.
Okay, so let's back up again. Other than your parents, can you hear other voices down there?
Subtitle, Jennifer.
I think I heard my mom say or moan or something. And then they did one more pop before they left. And then one of the guys said, we have to go now. It's been too long. And then they ran out the door.
I'm watching Jennifer, and I feel for her. I mean, she's been tied up and separated completely from her parents.
A reenactment.
Help me, please. I need help.
Calm down. What's going on?
They had guns, and they were holding my parents at gunpoint.
Can you lock your door?
I can't. I'm tied. My hands are tied.
She is unable to go and help them, to be of any assistance to them.
I know this is tough, but you know the importance of this statement. Tell me about the guy who tied you up.
Bill Curtis watches on his computer.
Can you describe his race to me?
Yes, he was black with dreadlocks.
Okay, and number two guy?
He had a hoodie, but I could tell that he was darker than
the first guy.
So he's a male black as well?
But thinner build. And then another one with Jamaican accent.
Okay. Did you ever hear how they got into the house?
No.
Doorbell ring?
No.
Kick door? Nothing like that?
I don't remember how they got in. I didn't get to see anything.
Okay. What about your parents? What, in your opinion, would cause people to target them? Are they known to keep large quantities of cash in their house?
She shakes her head.
Do they have a large quantity of cash in their bank?
I wouldn't say that it was large enough to raise flags. It's enough to pay bills.
Okay.
My mom's very diligent on making sure just enough.
Just enough. Okay. And what about your dad? What type of car does he drive?
He drives a Mercedes, and he loves that baby.
Is that right? So your mom drives a Lexus, your dad drives a Mercedes.
A photo of two cars parked in a garage appears. One is silver, the other black.
These are fairly expensive cars. They're not cheap.
Crime scene photos show cash and car keys.
Here's a family that came from Vietnam to Canada. They worked hard, had a modest lifestyle.
Photos of Bic.
Bic was a supervisor at a car park company where Han was employed as a machinist.
A photo of their brick home.
Their home was, albeit nice, it wasn't luxurious, but it was paid off.
A photo of Han's driver's license.
Han Pan, what's his lifestyle about? I mean, is he involved in some sort of nefarious business deals?
You know, was this a hit with regards to gambling debts or weapons or drugs?
Or a dispute with a neighbor, something that has triggered him to become a victim.
Jennifer's interview.
He said to my father, you lied to us, you lied to us. You just had to cooperate. And then they shot him.
She looks at Detective Slade. Next, crime scene photos show blood on a tan sectional. Inside a bedroom, dresser drawers are strewn about the room. Bill Curtis.
I'm looking at a room that's ransacked, and it's typically what a room would look like. There's some bloody clothing, pajamas, the area where Vic was soaking her feet after line dancing.
Photos of jewelry.
But there's also stuff here that ought to have been taken, some valuables. that weren't touched. There's a safe and a very expensive camera in the closet. There's a wallet with a bunch of $20 bills that certainly would have been taken if it was cash related.
A view of the house at night.
I mean, by all accounts, it sounds like the Pan family were a fairly normal family. But outward appearances are one thing. What actually happens inside the house or the goings-on are something completely different, right?
Jennifer's interview. The timestamp reads 4:29 a.m.
Is there anything else that you can think of that might help us right now in this investigation?
Jennifer stares straight ahead, slowly batting her eyes.
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, so the recorder is being shut off. It is now 4:30 in the morning. We're done. Of course you can use a washroom.
They both rise from the table. The picture on the monitor turns to static. Deborah gliding.
Once the interview is over, I take Jennifer outside and, you know, we walk out rather silently. We don't really say too much to each other. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, your mom has been murdered and your dad is in the hospital in a coma. How do you recover from something like this?
Imagery of the city as the sun rises. Television news programs.
A woman is dead and her husband injured after a home invasion in Markham.
Police tell us that there was a knock at the door at the home where this couple lived. Then three gunmen burst inside.
Why the Pan household? Why so violent? Questions detectives say they don't have answers for yet.
Flags whip in the breeze atop flagpoles in front of the police station. Words appear, day two. Bill Curtis.
It's now 8:00 in the morning. And I'm giving a full briefing to homicide uniform investigators. You know, we have a violent crime scene, so there's really no time to wait.
A man wearing a suit with neatly combed dark hair sits at a table with others in the office. Detective David McDonald, field investigator.
There's nothing normal about murder. But this one is particularly unnerving. I immediately start thinking about my own family and about how things can change in a moment.
A photo of a spent bullet.
And change forever.
Daytime, McDonald drives a car.
First assignment I'm tasked with is conducting a large-scale canvas of the area in and around where the Pans live.
Yellow crime scene tape surrounds the home.
We're looking for eyewitness information or any other pieces of evidence that might become relevant and important.
Officers talk to neighbors.
If you have any information, whether you think it's useful or not, if you could just please call York Regional Police or call your local police service or call Crime Stoppers, it might be that one tip, it might be that one piece of information that gets three very violent individuals off our streets.
Imagery of everyday city life.
We don't get a lot of homicides in Markham.
Deborah Gladding.
I mean, it's a very safe area. Very diverse cultural background. There's people from the Caribbean, from Asia, Southeast Asia. It's just a very quiet neighborhood.
Archival footage of police outside the Pan home.
So when it comes to something like this happening, it's like a grenade going off.
Rows of yellow and black police crime scene tape are strewn across the yard. A middle-aged woman with long black hair. Hong No, Pan family friend. Subtitle.
I couldn't understand it, why Bick was killed.
Hong sits by a desk wearing a long sleeve button-down green shirt.
I was very emotional. I could not believe that this had happened. There were times that I came to her house to hang out and often eat dinner with them.
A reenactment of a dinner party.
They were very hospitable. Very generous people who loved their friends.
People use chopsticks.
Han works 5 days a week and some overtime. He certainly isn't involved in the mafia or gambling or drinking. He's just a humble, down-to-earth man.
Reporters talked to several neighbors.
They've
they were just really quiet people. They didn't bug anyone. Yeah, it's really sad.
The randomness really scares me. It's, you know, if there was a motivation, if there's reason, you know, then we can all say, oh, it's their, they had the reason why.
York Police Chief Armand Labarge.
I promise you that we will leave no stone unturned in our efforts to identify and to bring to justice the suspects who brutally murdered Bin Ha Pan and terrorized her husband and daughter last night. Mr. Pan remains in serious condition. Thankfully, the daughter was not physically injured in this ordeal. We are appealing to anyone that may have information, might know who the suspects are, to please come forward.
Nighttime at the intersection of Romer Gate and Helen Avenue. A police car blocks the road. Men with clipboards stand on the sidewalk. David McDonald.
The canvas has been going on for about 6 hours.
Detectives walk the neighborhood streets.
At first, we're not getting anything helpful.
Detectives stand at the front porch of a home.
But then we finally get some information and learn about this person that's associated to their Pan residence.
A man sits in a car and uses a phone.
His name is Danny Wong. He is a drug dealer, and he's recently been in a relationship with Jennifer Pan.
Footage of Jennifer's interview appears on the monitor in the surveillance room. Jennifer paces. Bill Curtis.
An ex-boyfriend with some shady dealings is a significant detail. I mean, she should have provided information about that.
Alan Cook.
Now we're thinking, this Danny Wong.
Crime scene photos flash.
He may be the reason why this family was targeted. Is it something to do with drug dealing?
Daytime at the police station. Words appear day three. A man with glasses and short black hair sits with a detective in the interview room.
You're okay? I'll just go through the phone and read it. Okay, sir. Let me go through the form. The radio recording's on. Okay, just so you're aware, I'm going to read through this form with you. This is a sworn video statement form. Okay, do you understand the criminal consequences of making a false statement?
Yes.
So just say your name and just say...
My name is Daniel Wong. And
just speak up a little louder.
My name is Daniel Wong, and I give consent that this is being taped.
Okay, good.
Wong wears a dark jacket over a reddish T-shirt. The timestamp reads 4:19 p.m.
Now, the night that this happened, Monday night, what were you doing, Ken? I have to ask everybody.
I was at home sleeping.
You were at home? What time did you get home?
It was Monday. Monday I got home at about 9 to 10:30, somewhere around that time.
Okay, so you've been in trouble with the police, right, for drugs?
I've been in trouble with possession and trafficking, but I stopped. Like, as soon as I got in trouble, I didn't really do anything else.
The detective puts a hand to his face.
Okay, so tell me about your relationship with Jen.
I'm actually her ex-boyfriend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we had a relationship near the end of high school.
Okay.
And we sort of continued it until about 2 years ago.
Okay.
So then we just couldn't, we actually didn't, we were planning to stay together, but there was a big issue with her parents.
Oh.
Sort of thing.
And what was that?
Her parents were very strict. They pretty much drove her to the path where there's no time for a relationship.
Is there other reasons?
Probably because I didn't make enough money. Like, I was working at Boston Pizza, and they didn't approve of that. You know, we've been together for 7 years, and I haven't really formally sat down and just ate dinner with them or anything like that.
Okay. So...
And then she wanted to continue the relationship. And I told her, well, you know, your parents don't want us to be together, and there's nothing really we can do about it. And I just moved on.
Okay. And girlfriend?
Sorry?
Do you have a new girlfriend?
Currently?
Yes.
I'm seeing someone.
Oh, okay. What's her name?
Christine.
Christine, okay. Yeah. But you and Jen still talk on the phone regularly?
Well, she tries to call me once in a while. I'll call her sort of thing, like, just to see how she's doing. Because we were actually both getting harassed by private phone calls. And
who was you and Jen?
Yeah, me and Jen.
Okay. And you've received those over the last...
Like, up to actually like 2 days ago, 2-3 days ago. They just call, and then I'd answer, and then it'd just go quiet for like about 10 seconds, and then it'll hang up. And it would happen over and over, and like it got ridiculous. It was like 100 times, up to 100 times.
And then it went from hangups to
text messages
saying what?
Saying, we're watching you.
Curtis and Cook watched the archival interview together.
And Jen was getting crank calls too.
Yes. I mean, she would come to visit me at work, sort of thing, you know, bring me lunch, you know, sit, talk to me. Like, we were friends,
right? And they'd often say, what is she doing there? We thought we told her to stay away.
Right.
The last few that I received was bang, bang, bang.
Wong locks eyes with the detective.
Okay, so that's important.
Yeah.
Right? It was a message?
Yeah, it was a text message.
Oh, it was a text message.
Bang, bang, bang. Ha, ha, ha. This is some pretty messed up.
Yeah, pretty messed up stuff, yeah. Right? Okay.
Alan Cook.
It seems Danny Wong's been the subject of hundreds of crank calls over the last few months, as well as Jennifer.
The screen on a smartphone lights up with the words incoming call, unknown number. Bang, bang, bang appears.
This unknown source has said bang, 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 and then a week later, Jennifer's parents are then shot in the house.
The timestamp reads 6:23 p.m.
So you feel that what happened the other night is something to do with you, right? Because I'm
more than 95 to 99% sure that has nothing to do with my drugs.
That's a pretty bold statement, though.
Yep. I'm pretty sure about
it. How can you say that?
Because for marijuana, no one's going to shoot you for like a gram or like even a piece of it. Like that's it. Like,
okay. Let me just, I'm going to leave for a second.
Yeah.
And just, if you can think of it, go over the story. Make sure you try to get your dates and times.
Yeah.
And I'll ask you again, okay? Okay. I'm just going to go out for a minute to wrap my head around it too.
Wong lets out a breath and stares at the table. In the surveillance room, two monitors sit on a table. Wong appears on one. Jennifer's empty chair appears in the other. Bill Curtis.
Something's not right about this interview. I mean, there's more questions than there are answers. Is Danny Wong the target? Or is it Jennifer?
Jennifer appears, pacing. Alan Cook.
We now need to learn everything we can about Jennifer Penn. Who she hangs out with, what are her circle of friends doing? Is there something in her background that would shine light on why this incident took place?
An aerial view of the city. A man with dark hair and a full beard wearing a dark sweater. Nam Nguyen, high school friend.
I met Jennifer when I was around 13 years old. We went on a lot of school trips together. And sometimes we'd go skating or catch a movie with a group of friends. She was great to talk to.
In photographs, Jennifer flashes peace signs and sticks out her tongue.
Jennifer, you know, was bubbly, happy, confident, and very genuine. She talked about Daniel every now and then. They seemed happy at first. But there was a lot of drama in the relationship as well. Somebody's always high and low. Someone's always, like, heartbroken, breaking up, getting back together.
A man and a woman sit in a car. The man talks on a phone.
To be honest, I don't think that Daniel was the best boyfriend. I mean, I remember when Jennifer had been working for the entire summer to scrounge up, you know, some money. And she said she spent it all on a paintball gun for him.
A profile view of a man sitting on a sofa.
I couldn't even fathom, you know, spending a couple $1,000s on like one piece of equipment. But she said she felt like she had no one better to spend it on, including herself.
Imagery of city streets at night. Next, news reports.
York Regional Police are still searching for clues in Monday's violent home invasion that claimed the life of a Markham woman.
At this point, investigators are not ruling out any scenario, including the possibility the men were confused and broke into the wrong home. John Venavelli Rao, CTV News, Markham, Ontario.
Archival footage of police at the home during the day. Alan Cook.
So at this point, we're fielding calls from neighbors and the community, and they are in somewhat of a panic. They are worried that they may be victims.
A press conference.
Sorry, one question at a time.
They want answers.
Radio interview with Chief Armand LaBarge.
We're scratching our heads as to why they would shoot this innocent woman and try to kill her husband and steal a relatively small amount of cash. It just makes no sense.
Television news.
York Regional Police are appealing for witnesses tonight. So far, there's only one clue to work with.
That clue comes in the form of some grainy security images, images that police managed to seize from a neighbor's security system. There are also images that police hope might help identify the three armed suspects who literally terrorized a family here.
Grainy black and white footage shows the front of the Penn home at night. Bill Curtis.
This is a big moment in this case. The video is from across the street and points directly at the Penn residence.
A red circle around figures on the sidewalk appears.
As luck would have it, we could just about see three suspects coming into the house.
They appear as blurry dark shapes.
And then around 30 minutes later, we could see them exiting. One exited very quickly, and then a short time later, two run out of the house as well.
The circle follows the figures as they move away from the home.
All three suspects entered through the front door.
The footage shows emergency vehicles arriving at the home.
But what's critical to me is...
photographs show the front door slightly ajar.
There was no forced entry.
Audio from the 911 call.
Someone invaded your home, ma'am?
Someone broke in and I heard shots like pops. I don't know what's happening. I'm tied upstairs.
They just broke in and they tied you up? Yes!
Imagery of a staircase inside the home. Next, Bill Curtis watches Jennifer's police interview.
Did you ever hear how they got into the house? Doorbell ring?
No.
Kick door? Nothing like that?
No.
Okay.
Is there anything else that you can think of that might help us right now?
I now need to get Jennifer in for another interview and ask her some of the more difficult questions. I want to know who she's involved with, what's going on with Danny Wong.
Not off the top of my head.
I want to know everything about her.
Lights come on in the surveillance room. The monitor displays static snow. The static gives way to color footage of Jennifer on a different day.
Good to go?
Jennifer sits at the table with her hands clasped together. Words appear. Day 4, interview 2. Jennifer starts to wring her hands and rock in her chair as the detective takes his seat. The timestamp reads 9:34 a.m.
Okay, Jennifer, we're now being recorded. This is not new to you. We've done this once before.
There's no one else present in the room other than you and I, and monitoring this statement again is Deborah Gladding.
I can see Jennifer is struggling with having to come back in for a second interview. But we hope this is a safe room for her to speak to us one-on-one and candidly, and you know, that it gives her an opportunity to tell us what is actually going on.
Jennifer continues to fidget in her seat.
I'm just a little nervous.
She feigns a smile.
Don't be nervous, okay? I know that's tough to say. The truth is always the best way to relieve anxiety, okay?
Jennifer nods.
So tell me about your relationship with you and Daniel.
It was a really tough one. We went to high school together.
Yeah.
I lasted about 6 years, but I wasn't supposed to have a boyfriend.
So you were dating him essentially without your parents' knowledge and consent?
Yes.
And did you ever figure if Daniel stopped being a drug dealer? I mean, could that have drawn bad people to your house looking for large sums of money? Which is an obvious question.
I've asked him what he's up to and he just says running, like doing runs. But I don't ask him into detail. I just kind of went blind ear because I'm not with him.
Have you been experiencing anything, what you would call in the last little while, of any type of threatening behavior?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
He says it's just a friend, but everyone says it's his girlfriend. She has messaged me telling me to back off, to leave Daniel alone.
And what did you equate it to?
Just jealousy.
You still are equating it to the girlfriend.
Well, I don't want to... Like, I don't know 100%, so I don't want to point fingers.
So if you're not 100% and you don't want to point fingers, why do you believe it's her?
Because she has personally messaged me on Facebook telling me that I'm stupid. And sometimes when I text him, she texts me using his phone, telling me that he's with his girlfriend, Christine, and to leave him alone.
Jennifer rubs her necklace between two fingers.
Now, why didn't you tell me about that when I spoke to you the other day?
Inside the surveillance room.
Everything had just happened. I didn't think too much of it at the time.
Bill Curtis.
Jennifer is now suggesting that Danny Wong's new girlfriend is somehow involved in this.
A text reads, "We're watching you."
That perhaps the harassing phone calls to him and Jennifer are being generated from Christine's end to get her out of the picture.
Alan Cook.
Is this a possible love triangle that's going on? And if that was the case, how did the parents become the victims?
The photo of her parents on the balcony reappears.
Did your parents find out that you were dating Daniel?
Eventually.
And how did that go over?
Jennifer sucks in her lower lip.
Not well.
Explain to me what not well means. Like, who is against you having a boyfriend?
My father.
Your father? Okay, tell me about that.
She blinks several times.
Well, he gave me an ultimatum to either choose Daniel or to choose them, and I chose to stay home with my family. But even though he had moved on, we still wanted to be friends.
Okay. So then what happens?
Well, at first, I continued phone contact with Daniel, but I got caught. And that's when they took away my cell phone. And they said that they'd drive me places. And so pretty much, I wake up, I do my piano studies. I may go see my teacher for lessons, but that's pretty much it.
Imagery of Jennifer at a piano. Next, Fernando Baldassini, piano teacher.
Jennifer was coming to my home for weekly classes, and it was her father who actually drops her off outside my door. As a young pianist, she was exceptional. She was winning all the competitions year after year. She was the best of the best. I mean, the dedication that her parents put behind her, the thousands of dollars a year spent on all the competitions, was just incredible.
A reenactment of Jennifer playing the piano.
Then one day, one of the lessons, she just started to sob, she started to break down, and I had never seen that from her. And she says, "Fernando, my parents, they don't trust me where I go, they follow me around, they don't want me to go out with my boyfriend. He's not acceptable to my father. He won't allow me to waste time to go out with a cook. They are just driving me crazy."
A reenactment of Jennifer inside a restaurant.
So what kind of judgment did your father pass on him?
Images of Jennifer and Daniel on separate monitors.
He said that, you know, he wasn't a good match for me. He wasn't going anywhere in life, and he wouldn't be able to support a family.
Okay, so tell me more about him. Tell me what you're feeling right now.
Audio meters move as Jennifer speaks.
He helped me through a really difficult time in high school when I was younger. I have asthma, and when we went over to Europe, it acted up over there, and he took care of me over there.
Daniel stares blankly as he sits alone in his interview room.
You still have feelings for Daniel, don't you?
Yes.
Jennifer holds her necklace in one hand and rubs her stomach with the other. The timestamp reads 11:27 a.m.
So how is your home life? Like, you finish high school and then what do you do?
I wanted to do
kinesiology. But my father was very adamant on doing something in the medical field that was a little bit more successful, I guess you can say. He knew I didn't have the stomach for being a doctor. So he wanted me to become a pharmacist.
Subtitle, Hong No.
Big Ha said that their daughter had studied to be a pharmacist, but even after graduating, she still couldn't find a job. She worried and talked a lot about it. All she wanted was for her to be successful and not be looked down on by society.
Photos of Mary Ward's secondary school. Nam Nguyen.
When you look back at our high school, everybody was expected to be a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, or an engineer. And there's really no other choice. Maybe an accountant. I mean, we had a lot of immigrant families, people from Hong Kong, Taiwan, Vietnam, all over the place. And we all had the same kind of pressure from our parents. That's hard enough already, but for Jennifer, she was not anywhere close to being top of class, not even in an earshot. And this was a school where getting straight A's is kind of a standard.
In the interview, Jennifer continues to sit restlessly.
So, did you go to school for pharmacy? Did you get any university for pharmacy? No?
She shakes her head.
And how is this going with your dad?
He didn't know. I lied to him.
What did you lie to him? What did you tell him?
That I was going to school.
For?
For just science.
For science.
Bachelor of Science.
And did your mom know that you weren't going to university?
No.
So both your parents thought you had gone to university?
Yes.
Bill Curtis sits at his desk wide-eyed.
You gotta be shitting me.
Alan Cook and Bill Curtis watch Jennifer's interview on a monitor. What school did they think you were going to?
Ryerson.
Okay.
They would drive me down to Toronto, and they thought I was going to class.
Yes.
But I wasn't.
Alan Cook.
This is huge. This is of the same level a covert operator would use as a cover story.
And how did you feel about that? How did you feel about having to lie to your parents?
I felt guilty, but every time I tried to bring it up, there was just so much expectation.
Jennifer purses her lips and shakes her head. Next, imagery of Jennifer as a student. Nam Nguyen.
Expectation is definitely not just specific to the Vietnamese culture. But it is definitely a hard style of parenting, and it can definitely make or break a child. You know, if you're in an environment where you're expected to come out on top every single time and you're failing to meet that expectation, I think that could lead to disastrous results.
Hands adjust a Bachelor of Science in Pharmacy degree to Jennifer hanging on a wall.
We discovered that not only is Jennifer lied to her parents about attending university, but she's continued this lie for over 4 years.
Alan Cook.
She's also forged a false degree from the University of Toronto.
A photo of the degree.
This is shocking.
Jennifer's interview continues.
And they never question you about this?
No.
Bill Curtis.
If Jennifer is being truthful enough to say that, look, I've lied for 4 years, you know, that's a foundation to the rest of the story. I mean, what other lies hasn't she told us yet?
A red light glows above a sign that reads interview in progress outside interview room 3.
So let's talk about the call. You know, to 911.
Okay.
Jennifer rubs her stomach and forehead.
Help me, please. I need help.
What's going on?
Someone broke in and I heard shots like pops. I don't know what's happening. I'm tied upstairs.
Alan Cook.
We listened to the 911 call several times.
I'm tied upstairs.
We went over it frame by frame, listening to it, playing it back, and dissecting what had happened.
Can you
lock your doors?
I can't. I'm tied. My hands are tied behind my back. I had my cell phone in my pocket.
All the time, what bothered me was the fact that how is she able to make a phone call while her hands are tied behind her back to a banister?
A reenactment of a bound woman.
So how do the hands get behind your back?
He told me to stand up so he could tie my hands together. And I was trying to make it loose so I could...
She wiggles her hands.
I could do something, but he had pulled them so tight. And he made sure I squealed before he let go.
So they're tight and they're behind your back.
And that's when he grabs me and starts leading me down the stairs.
Does he pat you down or search you or do anything?
Thank goodness, no. Because if he had pat me down, he would have found my phone.
You're now bound to this, to the railing. Can you show me, can you stand up and turn around and tell me, just show on the camera, how your hands are bound?
Jennifer lowers her head and scrunches her face.
Just tell you.
Take it out of a traumatizing event, which it is, and put yourself into a more clinical position, because I want to see how you could physically get your phone out of your waistband. Just stand up and focus in on how you did it.
She grabs a cup from the table and takes a drink.
And I want you to stick that in your waistband as an example. Okay, so take your sweater off and make the call.
Deborah Glatting watches a monitor.
I could see that this is taking a toll on her. She doesn't want to relive that part and have to reenact that. But at the same time, we need to know how she was able to do it.
Jennifer removes her dark sweater.
Stand up and turn around. Put this in the side that you believe it was in.
She puts a phone in her waistband.
Great. Turn around. So that only you're looking away from me. You're looking exactly like, now here is where the banister is. Put your hands back behind your back. Okay. Now, and are you restrained from movement? How far can you move your hands from the banister?
They tied my upper arm.
Yes.
Around the banister.
Yes.
But my hands are bound together.
So your hands bound together, and this is the arm that's wrapped around against the banister?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now how can you get to the phone?
She takes the phone from her left rear waistband.
And how do you make the phone call?
She holds the phone in her right hand and brings it to her right waist.
911. Mm-hmm. And do you talk down like that?
Yes, I'm yelling at the phone like this.
And how can you hear?
I turned the volume on max.
Yes. So that's exactly the way that you're talking to her against the railing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good enough. Sit down. Put your sweater back on. Yeah, just put your sweater. Yeah, yeah.
The detective hands her the sweater. Alan Cook.
The fact that she's able to pull out her phone and make that phone call is very interesting to us. But not enough that it redirects us from the other theory that we're looking at.
So why would they leave you alone?
Bill Curtis.
The elephant in the room is, why would you leave a surviving witness? It's not... It doesn't make sense. If you're going to shoot two people, you're going to shoot the third.
Why would they not do the same to you?
Jennifer clutches her chest and shakes her head.
The only thing I can say is he said I cooperated.
The red light outside the room continues to glow.
Now, a question obviously stands, Jennifer, is you admittedly lied. You've lied to your parents about going to school. I'm saying to you right now, is there anything throughout the course of your statement today where you've lied to me?
Jennifer looks away from the detective. She shakes her head.
From your interaction with Daniel?
She looks at the detective.
From your, I'm not involved in drugs and I don't have anything to do with them and we don't have large sums of money? What about life insurance policies? Do your parents have life insurance policies?
Jennifer looks away and moves her fingers.
I don't know. I know they had a... I have one of myself.
Yes.
And my mom, they used to have one for me when I was younger.
Okay.
But half of that went to education, half went to... life insurance, and when they found out I didn't go to university, they asked for the money back.
So hang on a second here. You told me that they never knew you didn't go to university. When did they find out that you didn't go to university?
I told them that I graduated, but I never went to university. That I went for 2 years, but I never finished.
Okay. And they wanted the money back as a result of that?
Yes.
Bill Curtis leans closer toward the monitor he's watching.
So, back to another very difficult question. The resentment that you may have had towards your parents for the interference in your relationship and your life and essentially locking you down in your house.
She shakes her head.
At the end of the day, I love my parents and I chose to be with them. And if I wanted to, I could have just left, but I didn't. I wanted to stay with them and take care of them.
She looks straight at the detective.
So no interaction, no belief. You didn't have anything to do with this whatsoever. You don't engage in illegal activity?
No.
Okay, I heard a knock on the door. Keep beer with me.
She continues to clutch her chest as the detective leaves the room. She moves her hand from her chest and rubs her forehead. She grabs the cup and looks inside. It's empty. She looks down and rests her right cheek on her hand while tapping the fingers of her left hand on her thigh. She clutches her chest and looks up.
It's just me.
Deborah Gladding enters and sets a full cup on the table. Subtitle, Gladding.
You're okay, yeah, still? Okay, still?
Jennifer rolls her hands next to her head.
Everything's going. Okay.
Do you need a bathroom break?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Jennifer stands.
Sorry, I'm just a little rattled. Okay, yeah. You're doing fine. I'm just trying my best. If you have choices I've made, I haven't been in the bath.
Mm-hmm. But you can't worry about that. I mean, you learned, and you did what you had to do, right? It was something that you felt that you needed to do.
It's just like pieces here and pieces there, and I don't want to say something wrong.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, all the pieces are gonna come together, and it's all gonna fit, because what you're saying is the truth, right?
Jennifer runs her hands repeatedly across the lock of her long black hair while taking steps back and forth.
It's pretty clear that she's not telling us everything.
Bill Curtis watches and rubs his bottom lip.
You know, the grooming, the nervousness, the touching on her stomach. I firmly believe that she knows something.
She places her hands on her hips.
But there's only one other eyewitness, and that is her father, Han.
Han is loaded off the air ambulance.
Obviously, we can't interview him at this point because of the coma.
Jennifer holds her stomach and paces.
So until that happens, everything's still on the table as far as possibilities.
Let me just clear the hallway and then I'll escort you out, okay?
Jennifer finishes her drink, then continues pacing. Nighttime, Deborah Gladding drives a car.
Jennifer is very quiet on the car ride home. She's been lying. She didn't go to university. It's all been a web of lies that she's spun for the last 4 years.
A traffic light turns red.
But I can relate to that demand and that need to succeed. My parents came from the Caribbean and came to this country. And there's an expectation to always be able to be better than the next person. So in my mind, it's not just black and white.
Bill Curtis watches Jennifer pace on a monitor.
For me, the first thing that comes to mind is how pissed I'd be if I were her parents. I mean, it is somewhat shocking that someone's led that life. And what was she doing for the 4 years? You know, that's a question that needs to be answered.
Words appear, day 5. Next, an archival news report.
York Region Police has set up a command post in the neighborhood to try to ease residents' worries and to take in tips. Jack Heath is deputy mayor of Markham.
It's important to know that this was random and they're not happening very often. And Markham is a safe community. We've got an extraordinarily good police department and they're doing their job.
Imagery inside the police department. Bubbles gurgle inside a water cooler as detectives gather. Bill Curtis.
There's an adrenaline flow initially with homicide cases. Then that fades as people get tired.
Curtis sits at a desk.
But it's important to keep that energy up, not only for myself.
He steps out of an elevator.
But for my team.
David McDonald gets into a car.
So we check with the hospital. And learn that hand pan's being taken out of his coma.
The car travels down a city street. Next, David McDonald.
This is the moment in the investigation where everything changes. It's the chance to actually understand what happened in that house. And this is something from a person who looked death in the face and survived.
Daytime, an aerial view of the hospital. Imagery of IVs, monitors, and other equipment in a hospital room.
All you can hear is the buzz. The buzz of Mr. Penn's machines. One of the first things that I notice is his right eye is bruised, and there's a very small dot right beside his nose. And that's where he was shot. Mr. Penn then recounts what happened on that night.
Crime scene photos show blood covering items in the living room.
He went to bed early.
A red LED digital clock changes to 8:30.
His wife had been line dancing.
A reenactment of events.
And Jennifer was at home.
Han lies in bed. Someone holding a gun approaches him.
Mr. Pan is then awoken by a man with a gun who tells him to get up and to come downstairs. He sees his wife in the living room. She's hysterical. She kept saying over and over again, "We don't have any money. We don't have any money. Can you let us go?" One of the men in the house just told her to shut up.
Curtis and Cook study a board with photos. A desk phone rings. Bill Curtis.
Detective McDonald rings. And he says to me, "Are you sitting down?"
Mr. Pan tells me that he was on the couch being pistol whipped. Mrs. Pan was sitting in a separate couch, begging for her life. And while this is happening, Jennifer walks down the stairs in the company of one of the suspects. She's without bindings on her hands and appears to be in friendly conversation.
Jennifer 911 call.
"Help me, please. I need help.
Calm down. What's going on?
Someone broke in and I heard shots like pops. I don't know what's happening. I'm tied upstairs."
Curtis Gox.
"You gotta be fucking kidding me."
Crime scene photos show the cut black bindings on the stair railing.
"He told me to stand up so he could tie my hands together. And that's when he grabs me and starts leading me down the stairs. And then I heard two pops. My mom screamed."
Bill Curtis.
"Lie, lie, lie.
Take your time. Take your time."
At this point, I'm absolutely convinced that she's involved in the murder of her mother and the attempted murder of her father. So I'm going to post uniform officers at the hospital immediately. Under no circumstances is Jennifer going to be in the same room with her father, alone.
The words "day 9" appear over an aerial view of the city during the day. A reenactment shows a patient in a hospital room. David McDonald.
I go back to speak with Mr. Penn again, just to make sure that there's no other information that he wants to tell us. This time, he leans in and he says, "Use your police techniques. Use your police techniques to find out what Jennifer did."
an aerial view of the police station at dusk. Inside, fluorescent lights come on one by one in the hallway outside the interview rooms. Words appear. Day 14, interview 3.
All right. Come on in. I have a seat over here.
The timestamp reads 2:40 p.m.
It's down here, if you don't mind.
Jennifer is led into a room. She removes a black winter coat and sits across from a detective.
Okay.
Alan Cook.
This third interview of Jennifer is paramount to the investigation.
So just to let you know right away...
Which means Jennifer, we are no longer watching this on a video screen.
...and audio taped, okay? That's actually for your protection and mine, if anybody ever asks.
We're now in the monitored room, basically glued to the window, waiting to see how this interview is going to unfold.
And of course, you don't have to give a statement if you don't want to. Do you understand that?
Jennifer Malls.
I want to do it.
Okay. Just hold on a second.
Jennifer places a finger under her glasses, rubs her left eye, then lowers her head.
We have seen Jennifer demonstrate the sophistication of lying to cover her tracks, to lie to her family and friends for years.
Okay, we're having technical difficulties here. What we're going to do is I'm just going to move my equipment to the other room, okay? And then we'll move over there next door, okay?
But now she's going up against Bill Gates, a detective who is trained in identifying and detecting lies.
Gates moves to a different room.
In him, Jennifer's met her match.
Subtitle. Okay, let's call the constable in.
Okay.
Jennifer hunched over in her chair, sits up as the middle-aged Gates returns. Next, a view of the hall outside the interview room.
So tell me about the piano. When did you start with the piano?
Jennifer sits with her hands in her lap.
When I was 4.
Wow. Yeah, I took it in grade school, too. I still remember Swans on the Lake. I know how to play that, that's about it. Now, your parents. Do you ever feel that it's pretty tough to live up to their expectations?
Yeah.
I get that feeling, that maybe you weren't as smart as what they thought that you were. What else did you do to pretend you were in school?
When they asked for something, I'd try to make a document for them.
Okay. So what type of documents did you...
Student loan.
Okay.
Report cards.
Okay. And how did you do them?
Using Photoshop.
Photoshop. Okay. And did they ever question it?
Jennifer fidgets with her hands.
Not really, no.
And I'm sure there were days when you actually... planned that this is the day I'm going to tell him, and then you just couldn't spit it out.
She nods.
All right. Now, well, if your parents had let you, would you still be with Daniel?
Gates leans back.
If they didn't interfere, what would have happened?
Maybe I'd still be with him. I'm not sure.
But he'd already moved on.
And how did that make you feel?
He was the person who just filled an empty void for me. So I felt that a part of me was missing. You know, I wasn't happy with any parts of my life. My friends were moving on with their lives, and it felt that I wasn't going anywhere. I was kind of being left behind.
Okay. And what was the worst of things that?
I cut myself.
Jennifer's left foot turns side to side.
Well, we're going to have to deal with it one step at a time, okay?
The timestamp reads 4:23 p.m.
Now, the reason why I am here today is... that I'm an expert in what we call truth verification. Okay, I'm not a homicide detective.
Jennifer rubs her right cheek. Next, Bill Curtis.
What Jennifer doesn't know is that in Canada, police are allowed to lie. So long as we're not bringing the administration of justice into disrepute, then we can do that.
In the interview room, Gates leans forward.
So my job in any case is to go over all the forensics of that case, okay?
Jennifer twists her hair.
I mean, they're going over that house with a fine-tooth comb. Now, do you know what satellites can do?
No.
Did you watch any of these war programs on TV where you can see the satellite honing in on buildings? And basically, if people are moving around in a house, it's like an x-ray, okay? Are the people in the positions that the witnesses are telling us they were in?
She continues twisting her hair.
Or are they different?
Alan Cook.
Bill Gates is introducing a theme using the satellite information. This is obviously a trick to get Jennifer to realize that maybe what she's saying has been false, and she may need to produce another lie to cover up for those lies.
Gates rocks in his chair, then leans forward closer to Jennifer.
Do you know who was in that house that night?
I don't know.
You do, Jen. There's no question about that, okay?
The issue here is this, and you have to look at me.
A view through the two-way mirror.
Your dad wasn't supposed to be a witness. That's where this whole thing went wrong, okay? Your dad wasn't supposed to live. You gave a description of a black guy with dreads. There was no black guy with dreads in there, okay? He gave a good description of the guy that you were with, and he's not even black. Why did you say that?
That's what I remember.
Now,
their eyes lock.
You're involved in this, right?
Cook glances back at Curtis. Jennifer lowers her head and tugs at her hair.
What happened?
Jennifer sits motionless with her head down.
What happened? Jen?
Jennifer hunches over.
You didn't think this far ahead, did you?
She holds her forehead.
Hey, those guys didn't show up there to take your money. They came there to shoot your parents.
Jennifer buries her face in her hand.
And they didn't get there randomly. This was set in motion. But once they started, once they came in, you couldn't stop it, could you? Could you?
Gates moves closer. Jennifer keeps her face buried.
Jen?
I've wanted it to stop.
I know. Why didn't they stop for you?
They don't know who they were.
But you were part of the planning, right?
Jennifer remains motionless.
Right? Jen?
Curtis and others watch through the mirror.
You're sorry, aren't you? Pardon?
Bill Curtis.
It's very faint, so I have to lean up.
Can't hear you here.
Jennifer is hunched over. Gates is right above her head.
They were only supposed to take me.
They were supposed to take you?
I needed them to kill me.
At this point, I'm almost in disbelief as to what I'm hearing.
Why?
I didn't want to live anymore.
Is what she's telling us now truth?
Jennifer remains hunched over.
So we were supposed to take the whole family in?
No, just me.
What went wrong?
I don't know.
Okay, what do you know? How come it was supposed to be you?
Gates places a hand on her shoulder.
Because I didn't want to be here anymore.
Why not?
Because I was such a disappointment.
Okay, so how did this play out then?
Jennifer sits up.
It wasn't supposed to happen like this.
Okay, I appreciate that. How did it happen? What was your request?
Come in. Take me up.
And how much was he going to charge?
$2,000.
Okay. And what's his name? What did he go by?
Homie, my boy.
Jennifer stares at the floor.
Okay, well, you're not going to show up at your house randomly. You're going to have to know exactly when he's coming. So how did that play out?
You texted me.
Pardon?
You texted me.
Okay, so what was the agreement then?
I owed you $2,000 and they were supposed to kill me. And then they called me and made sure that they had access.
Okay, so how did they do that, though? What was the question on the phone? Was it a text or a phone message?
Text. VIP access.
What does that mean?
Just to make sure that there was a way in.
Jennifer hunches over and buries her face into her hands.
So after your mom got home, what did you do?
Went down and said hello. Pretended to check the door.
Okay, you have to sit up because I can't hear you here.
Jennifer sits up. Her hand covers her eyes.
How did you get in contact with homeboy in the first place?
I asked a friend.
Okay, which one?
One I can't find anymore.
What's his name?
She shakes her hand. Bill Curtis.
At this point, it's clear that we need a warrant to get into Jennifer's phone. To find out who she's associated to, and how did she make this happen.
Jen?
In a dimly lit room, Bill Curtis, wearing blue nitrile gloves, removes a phone from an evidence bag. The phone lights up. A photo of Jennifer is on the main screen. Curtis opens the phone app, revealing more photos of Jennifer.
We quickly identify the content of her text.
A skull image appears next to the name Homeboy.
Immediately, we can see she's received one from Homeboy.
The words "I need the time of the completion, think about it" appear in a text. She replies, "Today is a no-go. Dinner plans."
This is pretty telling, but it's really just the beginning.
Alan Cook.
What is particular of interest is the text message conversation between Daniel Wong and Jennifer.
Jennifer texts, "Do you love me and want to be with me?" Daniel replies, "I'm really down right now, Jen. I'm sorry." Cook reads more texts.
"Jennifer, what do you mean? What are you sorry for? Can you please answer?"
Bill Curtis.
Daniel responds, "I don't know how to say this. I feel the way you feel, but about her."
A sad emoji face with a tear.
"Jennifer, so you feel for Christine what I feel for you. Then call it off with Homeboy."
"Daniel, call it off with Homeboy. You said you wanted this with or without me. You said you wanted this for you."
Images of their faces appear.
And then Danny gets pissed at her.
Daniel texts, "I was always walking on eggshells with you. I did everything and lined it all up for you. Contact Homeboy."
I mean, this is the nail in the coffin for Danny Wong.
Jennifer's phone dials Homeboy.
He's clearly assisted Jennifer in contacting Homeboy.
A text from Homeboy reads, "Game time." Alan Cook.
"The information here is gold."
Security footage from the neighbor's camera.
"We now have one of the conspirators."
Shadowy figures leave the Pan home.
"We need to find this guy."
Bill Curtis.
"We assign a surveillance team on Danny Wong and investigate one phone to the next.
We look at multiple phones left, right, and center."
Alan Cook.
"Systematically, we're able to pinpoint who our suspects are. We're able to identify Eric Carty as one of the suspects, David Milvagnum as a suspect, as well as Homeboy, Lenford Crawford, as the third suspect."
Daniel texts, "What are you doing?" Jennifer replies, "Waiting for Homeboy's call." Daniel replies, "Okay, be safe." Bill Curtis.
"Lenford is an associate that Danny hangs around with, who also deals drugs. They're going to be arrested."
Phone tap recording of Homeboy and friend.
"Shit, okay, so you know the kid, right?"
"Yeah."
"The boys came for him today at work."
Subtitle Homeboy. "And took him?"
"Yeah, they're placing him under conspiracy."
"Wow, you gotta be kidding me."
"Fuck, I don't know what's going on, man.
Unreal. Unreal. A reenactment shows a man putting his hands behind his head, interlocking his fingers. Next, Jennifer's police interview.
It's all going to come out, okay? And we need to have a resolution here. Because this wasn't for you, okay? The request was for your parents and your parents only, okay?
Is that what you want me to say? But that's not
yes.
how what happened.
Tell me though. What happened. I want you to tell me that you made the plan for your parents. Okay, we're
not...
going to get to the rest of it anyways, okay? We already...
The interview's gone on for 3+ hours. Jennifer's described how this is a suicide by hitmen gone bad.
Yes, we know criminals aren't that smart some of the time, but I don't think that they could get this whole plan mixed up and kill the wrong people. Total bullshit. She set this whole thing up.
It doesn't feel good to have secrets, does it?
And now the cards are going to fall.
Jen?
Jennifer lowers her head and tugs at her shirt.
Give me a second.
Gates rises and walks to the door. Jennifer sits in the room by herself. She loosens a sweater and puts her head between her knees, wrapping her hands over the back of her head.
This is the moment where, based on the evidence as it presents itself, we can now understand exactly what happened that night.
In a reenactment, a smartphone sits on top of a bed. A text from Homeboy reads, "Game time."
Jennifer received a text from Homeboy saying, "Game time."
Jennifer picks up the phone.
Then she waited until her mom came back from line dancing and came down to say goodnight to her mom.
Jennifer taps her mother's shoulder, then walks away.
And then she walked over to the door. And mom locked it. Effectively leaving her parents as prey. And then went back upstairs, where she continued to text with the suspects.
The surveillance footage reappears. A red circle forms around an upstairs window of the home.
We believe that she then turned the lights on and off, signaling for them to come into the house. And then she went back to her bedroom to wait for it to unfold.
Multiple crime scene photos flash by, ending with a blood-splattered sectional in the living room.
If you can imagine the shock or the horror that Bickenhan must have experienced when these strangers entered the house.
Dad? I'm just calling 911. I'm calling 911.
Hello.
I'm okay. I'm all right.
It's evil. It's as evil as it gets.
In the interview room, Jennifer rapidly strokes her hair with both hands as Gates re-enters the room. Gates sits. He has several papers in his hands.
Okay. I need you to listen close to me, okay, Jen?
Jennifer sits up.
At this point in the investigation...
He leans close.
I'm going to be arresting you for murder.
Jennifer just stares.
Also attempted murder and conspiracy to commit murder. Do you understand that?
She casts her gaze downward.
Just tell me if you understand those charges. Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. It is my duty to inform you that you have the right to retain an instruction.
Police have made an arrest in the deadly home invasion in Markham, and tonight, in a stunning twist, the daughter of the victim is charged with orchestrating the crime that caused her mother's death.
Police now say the victim's daughter, Jennifer Penn, is the mastermind behind the killing of her mother, Biha Penn, and the shooting of her father, Hui Han Penn.
Fernando Baldassini.
My wife and I looked at each other. We simply just couldn't accept it. Is there something that I missed? Was there something that I didn't see?
People are horrified and confounded by the very idea of someone killing the people who brought them into this world.
Video of Jennifer avoiding the camera. Next, Nam Nguyen.
I immediately flash back to the moment that I hugged Jennifer at her mother's funeral. I had been so genuine and so emotional at that point that I felt like everything I said was kind of like hollow. And I just felt, you know, betrayed somehow.
A headline reads, from victim to accused. Next, Deborah Gladding.
So I come back in the next morning and I'm in shock. When did this, how did this happen? What is going on? I mean, I had actually felt sympathy for her.
Imagery of Gladding with Jennifer in the interview.
How could she have done something like this?
Alan Cook.
After the arrest, we found her diary, which led to some interesting reading as to the frame of mind she had. It showed that Jennifer complained that her parents were restrictive, but only because they didn't want her dating a drug dealer. In Jennifer's own words, they worried that he would bring her life down. Everything else is about Daniel and being with him. She would draw butterflies and puppy dogs.
Bill Curtis.
She wanted to have this fairy tale relationship with Danny Wong.
That was her end goal.
And she was going to do her damnedest to make that happen.
A phone screen displays incoming call, unknown number.
We now believe all the hundreds of text messages, the hundreds of threats to Daniel Wong.
Alan Cook.
It was Jennifer. It was Jennifer constantly contacting him, trying to make her way back into his life and move Christine out.
In the interview room, Jennifer sits alone at the table. She quickly puts on her glasses as the door opens.
This is excessive behavior. Over-the-top behavior that she just wants to be with him.
Nam Nguyen.
For me, Jennifer was just looking for love and validation. She probably thought, Daniel is the only one who really understands who she is. So if she loses that, then what's left? You know.
Alan Cook.
But why would Daniel want to get involved? He's already in a relationship with another female and had cut it off with Jennifer.
Daytime, a present-day aerial view of the home.
There's the financial gain, the insurance, the house. A part of that was going to be hers.
Alan Cook.
Jennifer was going to come in to a reasonable $500,000.
Just right down there.
And Daniel probably thought he could influence Jennifer and have access to this money.
Okay, good.
I believe to possibly further his drug activities.
Archival television news.
When Han Pan found out, the ultimatum. I told Jennifer that she has to cease the relationship with Danny Wong. If not, you have to wait until I'm dead.
Video from Jennifer's interview. She sits with her head lowered, rubbing her chest with her right hand. Alan Cook.
Much to our surprise, we discovered that this was not her first attempt at murder, and that she had approached a friend of hers around 10 months before and asked him to kill her father. She even went as much as paying this person.
A photo of Jennifer in custody.
This plan obviously didn't come to fruition, but this just shows you the intent that she had, the cold and calculated plan that she put in place, not once, but twice.
Hong No.
That happened? I don't think so. So she had planned this before? She should pay the price.
Archival footage of a body bag on a stretcher.
The most heartbreaking part is that on the night of the homicide, it was a gunman pointing a gun at Bic. Bic's put on her knees, and her last words were, "Don't hurt my daughter."
Archival news broadcasts.
A Toronto area jury has found a woman guilty in a hire-to-kill plot that targeted her parents. Jennifer Pan has been convicted of the first-degree murder of her mother and attempted murder of her father.
At first, she had no reaction, but as the news sunk in, she broke down and started to sob.
Daniel and Jennifer appear on monitors. Deborah Gladding.
In the end, she chose Daniel and was determined to be with Daniel at any cost.
Jennifer paces in her interview room.
For her, this was a love story gone wrong.
She stops and rests her forehead against the wall. David McDonald sits at his desk, looking down at his hands.
This was important. What we do is important. And,
McDonald's face tightens. He feigns a smile and fidgets with his hands.
There needed to be something good that came out of it. And this was not going to help bring anybody back, but I think we did right by Mrs. Penn and we did right by Mr. Penn.
The photo of Bic and Han on the deck standing next to each other and smiling reappears. Words appear. Jennifer Pan, Daniel Wong, and their co-accused were sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole for 25 years. Han Pan was granted a lifetime non-contact order against his daughter. Following a successful appeal against their conviction for the first-degree murder of Bic Ha Pan, all the accused have been granted a new trial. Jennifer maintains her innocence. End credits. Audio description by Descriptive Video Works. Written by Jeff Heck. Narrated by Matthew Dick. Subtitles by Saffron Henderson. Written and directed by Jenny Popplewell. Editor Bjorn Johnson. Executive producers Louise Norman and Jeremy Grimaldi. Producer Marianne Adusi. Director of photography Christopher Titus King. Original music Nanita Desi. Co-producer Paul Newen. Drama producer Nick Justin. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Any unauthorized use may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Copyright 2024, Netflix.
A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.